We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
I have a lot of respect for Mike Davis. I think that he is a very good football player. We obviously thought that when we brought him in as a free agent. And he's a really good person. He runs hard. He's doing everything that they're asking him to do. I mean, you're seeing him break tackles. I'm pretty sure he leads the league in broken tackles or yards after contact. They're putting him on screens. He's smart. He's good in protection. I just have a lot of respect for him. And for us, you know, we ended up having the ability to get David, you know, last year after we picked up Mike. So we had a couple backs there and then with Tariq. And so it just happened to be that way. But Mike Davis was really respectful as he left here. And, you know, he's playing really well.
That's Matt Nagy on his former player, Mike Davis, who was a Bear last year and was terrible. And all of a sudden, he's not just not terrible, he's really good on the Carolina Panthers. And he himself, I can't believe I'm saying this, we're doing pregame for a Bears game in which Mike Davis presents an actual
problem.
He presents a problem. Cole Wright is sitting in with me. I'm Dan Burstein here on the Lawrence Holmes Show. Cole Wright of the Marquee Network and spent plenty of time with the NFL Network. I love stories like this. I love when a nondescript player is just good. I don't know why I like it so much. It happens in football all the time. Guys like Raheem Mostert or guys who get off a practice squad and Philip Lindsay, where all of a sudden it's like you're not supposed to be good.
Undrafted free agent.
Yeah, you're just good. There's something satisfying about that that sort of reminds you that maybe opportunity and hard work can matter for some of these guys.
Yeah, and with Christian McCaffrey being out, you talk about opportunity. That's what Mike Davis has gotten down there with the Carolina Panthers. In the last three games that there's been no CMC, I think 90-plus scrimmage yards for Mike Davis, and you said that, you know, last year he was terrible with the Bears. I don't think that he was. I mean, his numbers suggest that he was not good, but it also could indicate that maybe he wasn't utilized the correct way. And I think that's what we've seen around the league. Like, so are you telling me that Le'Veon Bell all of a sudden leaves Pittsburgh, sits out for a season, gets his legs just a little more fresh, and then goes and plays for the garbage Jets and the offensive genius? Like, once again, no disrespect, but I have a hard time finding Adam Gase as an offensive genius.
You keep on using that phrase.
Yeah,
I do not think it means what you think it means.
Well, yeah, I'm going to say, you say I worked at NFL Network for so long, but you know my guy Maurice Jones-Drew. That's I take a page from his book.
Okay.
He always says, you know, no disrespect, and then goes on to say some borderline disrespectful stuff. But I don't believe that Adam Gase is an offensive genius. I'm sorry, he's clinging to these play calling duties. Whatever's going on with gangrene, clearly not working. And I feel like Le'Veon Bell's now a member of the Kansas City Chiefs. Guess what's going to happen? He's going to go there, and he's going to, with Eric Bieniemy, he is going to be a serious problem with Patrick Mahomes and all that speed and all that talent on that offense. He is going to be back to what he was in Pittsburgh. If my inclination serves me right, I think that's what's going to happen.
I just wonder about his particular running style in an Andy Reid offense, because he waits and waits and waits and is almost patient to a fault. When I understand the belly stretch stuff, some of the zone stuff where that's okay. They'll run some things where they want to hit it up in there too, and they're going to tell him, look, this is the hole. Go to it. Don't sit and wait and dance, because there are few runners. You would never teach a kid at the high school or college level to run the way Le'Veon Bell does, because it's a unique
style. I mean, do you teach a dolphin to swim? Do you teach an eagle to fly? No, that's what they do.
I have not.
And running like that is what Le'Veon Bell does. I mean, he does that, and it's an anticipatory run. He says, okay, that hole's going to open up in 3, 2, pow, hits that hole, and he's gone. And I think that's a little tougher to do when you play on the New York Jets. I mean, plain and simple, the New York Jets are not good at playing tackle football.
And you said
that's a problem.
You mentioned that Adam Gase, you know, is sarcastically offensive genius, and that sort of falls into the way
he's had that label, though. Why?
I know.
Why? Only time he won was with Peyton Manning, essentially, and he did a little something special here with the Bears, but I don't think that was worthy of an offensive genius tab.
The problem is, and Matt Nagy's learning this too, because he's got quite the reputation as an offensive mind as well, and we haven't really seen that come to fruition yet. He knows it, and he's addressed it. The difference is, the huge difference is, Gase can't get away with the strategical and tactical issues because he's an even worse head coach. He's an even worse leader of men. If you read the stuff that comes out of there about how he will finger point about how nothing is ever his fault,
sure.
There's always ways of saying, well, that wasn't on me. You can't put that on me or that. You talk to this guy, and players know, and they have no respect for it.
Nobody wants to play for that.
No, because there's no accountability. I'll say this about Nagy. Even though everything else, we haven't checked the boxes yet on his offense because they can't score. And until they score, we're not going to believe that all of these magical concepts and problem-solving abilities he has are really there. But
he keeps it in-house.
He's a really good head coach.
Yep.
And he's accountable. He is at times more transparent than, at least internally, when he deals with players. He says it to your face. He doesn't do stuff behind your back. Mm-hmm. They play like it. They're not a perfect team by any stretch. But the only observation, the only thing I know for sure after 5 games, mm-hmm. they play hard. And they beating these bad teams, coming back the way they do, they play for him. They believe. And whatever he's selling, they're buying. And it's helped them overcome a lot of self-imposed problems so far.
Absolutely. This Bears, like you said, they play hard, and they play hard when they're down. They've been down by double digits 3 times this year and gone on and gotten wins. And in the first 5 games, the last team to do that, the last Chicago Bears squad to do that, the 85 team. I mean, that just shows you what this team is made of. Like, guys, we're down, but we're not out. It's almost like, you know, watching Russell Wilson the other night. He's like, this is going to be an unbelievable comeback. A guy who always believes that his team is in the mix.
It's so funny because I'm out. I'm like watching TV. I'm the first guy. This is
come on.
Really? Oh, yeah. My son always yells at me, too.
Oh, you can't be like that.
Be like that. I've been a Bears fan all my life. I know exactly. It's like 13-0 at half. Like, this is totally over. And I always write a flash post-game column, mm-hmm. and my editor here, Cody, wants it like as quickly as possible. Like, he wants that thing. He wants 700 words.
Bang.
And wants it right away. Get it up. Get it out there and mm-hmm. you know, put it in the bloodstream. So I always try to write as early as I can. And the Bears punish me, especially this.
Oh, you can't. Yeah, you have to wait.
This year's team
you can't try to beat deadline.
Punishes me because I'll have a whole thing of, you know, this is, get rid of this guy and this sucks and he sucks and this is awful and I don't know what I'm doing. This made me throw up. It's like, wait, Dad, they scored again. Yeah, I know. And then it's like, they just got a turnover again. Yeah, I know. And then it's like, miracle Bears pull another one out and everything is delete, delete, delete. But I always think, yeah, no, that's it. And I'll be damned if they disagree with me and they believe in themselves more than I believe in them. That's cool.
I mean, you have to. It's almost like, you know, we were at the Marquee Sports Network studios. We were getting ready to do, it looked as if it was back-to-back losses for the Cubs to the Milwaukee Brewers. And then ninth inning, Jason Hayward comes up and, just bingo. I mean, that's what you saw, a home run. And then that changed everything. We went, you know, from being in studio saying, okay, we're going to have to see how we bottle this up. This is going to be a Cubs loss, as opposed to, wow, this is a huge Cubs win. And then the next day, Alec Mills goes out there, throws a no-hitter, and it's a whole different variety. So, you know, you can never really count that Bears team out. And, I mean, I know that that's not ideal when it comes to, you know, writing against a deadline. You need to get 700 words in. But when you can but when you can go back and say, hey, this is a great Bears comeback, I think that makes the words just flow that much easier.
Yeah,
to writing about a loss with 500 already in the can with an extra 200 to add.
What I should do, I should do like a parallel universe where instead of deleting, I should just save it and then at some point publish all of what would have been in
and
do like a parallel universe Bears season when they keep flipping the script on you. And I don't know, I asked Patrick Manley about it too. I don't know why so many NFL games have that happen, why you do see so many late comebacks. The only thing I can think is so many teams now are real quick to go to a shell zone coverage. and they allow for some of those chunk plays, and then you get the randomness of the ball bouncing funny or an interception or a strip sack or a kickoff return, it may just be the teams get too conservative, but it does happen in other games. It's not just Bears games.
Yeah, and I also think it's a collection of professional athletes that at the end of the day, what do they all do? They all believe in themselves. I mean, if you're out there and if you want to doubt me, go ahead and watch me. I mean, these guys are all professional athletes, and when people say, oh, that guy's a bum or this guy's a bum, whether it's hockey, baseball, football, basketball, it doesn't matter. Every guy that's in a professional sporting league, none of them are bums. This is a public service announcement. If there's a guy that's playing on your television and he's cashing a check every other Thursday, he's not a bum.
Well, some are worse than others, though.
Well, he might not be as good as some of the top flight guys, but guess what? If you take the worst dude in the NBA and bring him out to a court, guess what he's going to do? He's going to destroy cats. I remember Brian Scalabrine.
That's the Scalabrine argument.
Yeah, when people are like, oh, I could take Scal. No, absolutely. Scal, the white mamba, will do a number on you in a jiffy.
NBA player.
Yeah.
And especially if you ever
veteran NBA player, too.
And when you watch, and see, for me, and I always talked about this, that one of my favorite things is watching great athletes in their most casual moments, like little asides in practice and something. Like when you go to a Blackhawks practice, and
just watch guys flipping it.
Yeah. You go to a skate and you just watch how easily somebody is flipping the puck up and down and just doing little like 180s of the puck on the flat of the stick and then to the backhand and do it. And not even thinking, not even really looking at it. Or you watch a PGA pro on the range.
Yeah. Shot shaping.
It's inhuman.
Yeah.
It's inhuman. And it happens in baseball, watching the greats watching Ichiro take batting practice. And shot shaping and hitting, he's going to hit, tailing shots over shortstop over and over and over. And then 450-foot shots down the right field line that I don't know. The equivalent in football's got to be, it's got to be when you see a guy, receiver catching passes off the jugs machine turned up all the way.
Yeah.
That would break your fingers.
Especially one-handed.
Yeah.
Like, they catch it, with their back turned, and they have catch it one-handed and catch it going the other way.
Yep.
It's like just the ability to stop that ball on a dime. And I know the gloves are a little bit different this day and age. I was talking about that with Tom Thayer and Dan Hampton the other day before we shot our Bear Essential show at Marquee Sports Network. And the gloves, I mean, could you imagine some of the receivers? Could you imagine Willie Gault with those gloves?
Well, remember Stickum, though. I don't know if you go far back enough to when a lot of Fred Biletnikoff.
Absolutely.
And they were just covered in goo. And it could hit him in the back of the hand.
But could you imagine Randy Moss with those gloves? I mean, come on now. I mean, if Randy Moss could get in the open in the flat, which is pretty much what he did every single time down the sideline, and then he went, once he went, woo-woo, and then threw his hand up, I mean, his hand, you could throw anything there. I mean, you could throw a toaster. He's catching. Come on.
John is in Plainfield. He's on the score. Hello, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine.
Good.
I am so sick and tired of Nagy saying that he's content with his running game. What running game? I mean, how can you sit there and tell everybody that you're content with the running game when you had an opportunity to go get Le'Veon Bell for pennies, probably?
I'll tell you why. I think the easy answer to that is his no turds rule. I think the way Le'Veon Bell has exited some places, I don't think that was a football decision. I don't. And they it also may mean they like Lamar Miller more than they're letting on, because Lamar Miller, if healthy, can be a pretty dynamic runner in his own right. And I'd
like to see David Montgomery get more carries, though. I mean, when David Montgomery, when you give him the ball, I'd have to go back and look at all the numbers to pinpoint, but if David Montgomery gets over X amount of carries, that's when you see that production kick in. And I feel like if you have a volume back in your offense, what do you need to do? You need to feed him. It's not about what things look like in the second or the third quarter. It's about, do you win at the end of the game, and what do his stats look like when all the dust settles?
Get a lead. They haven't been playing on a lead. They're always chasing. So much of the play calling is a function of clock and of being behind. Like, if you get a 10-0 lead and then run to your heart's content, and then you can run off, be under center, have these guys firing off the line, and you don't have to keep gaming everything. You don't have to keep solving puzzles. You don't have to get the exact right play call, but it's so critical to play from a lead, and then you do that, and you're going to make a lot of old school Bears fans very, very happy.
And you say, that Matt Nagy doesn't want, he says he has a no turds policy. Well, maybe Le'Veon Bell was a turd in New York because of the thing that was going on around him. I mean, is that actually a great situation? Not necessarily. And when you look at him and his exit from the Pittsburgh Steelers, it's because he wanted to be compensated like how he needed to be. I mean, he was putting up numbers of a number two wide receiver and putting up numbers as the best running back in the game. But he wasn't even getting as the best running back in the game. You're not getting paid like a number two wide receiver on anyone's team. Number two wide receivers, by and large, make more than top flight running backs. Mm-hmm. And he said, okay, well, should I recategorize my position? Like, let's call me a number two wide receiver. I just want the money. I just want what's mine. And he wasn't able to come to terms.
Jimmy Graham tried to do that too. Remember when he was producing like a wide receiver,
it makes a lot of sense. He is a wide receiver. Absolutely. We saw him like this year. He already has four touchdowns. That last year, the Bears tight end position didn't have four touchdowns all season long.
I wonder if they had three. Next up, we're going to have a conversation with Roy Wood Jr., comedian and actor and correspondent to The Daily Show. He's a big Cubs fan, so we'll talk to him about some disappointment there and other things going on with him. He is coming up next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
But there's nothing corroding the stadium experience more for fans than the Kiss Cam. Blatant romantic bullying passed off as entertainment for years. Take two chumps who just want to enjoy the $12 beer. And then for no reason at all, you put a camera in their face and demand that they make out in front of 40,000 people. I guess paying to see the best athletes in the world perform on the biggest stage of their lives is not enough for you. No, that's not enough.
You probably know that man's voice, that of Roy Wood Jr. He is on Twitter at Roy Wood Jr. And the longtime Chicago Cubs fan joins the Lawrence Holmes Show now on the Altamonte Ford Hotline, Altamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Dan Bernstein here with Cole Wright. Roy, how are you?
What's going on? How y'all doing, man?
Doing good.
Have you recovered from another Cubs playoff ouster?
Well, you know, Cubs fans are conditioned for playoff disappointment, which is an improvement from the 90s when we were conditioned for no playoffs. So, you know what? It's like riding a bicycle when you tap into that disappointment. You know, you just have to dig deep and remember what it was like. And was it 03, 07, 2015? Am I nailing all of my Cubs playoff years? There was the...
Yeah. 07 and 08.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, 7 and 8.
Sweep courtesy of the Dodgers in 08. Oh, that was the worst. Yeah. Roy, I have a question for you, though, man. As you sat and watched the Marlins just chip away at the Cubs, man, not only were you disappointed, but were you disappointed and were you wearing that namesake Chicago Cubs robe? Because I know that's what brings a lot of good luck to the Cubs.
You know what? We didn't go with the victory robe this year. I feel like the victory robe's losing juice. It's got one tour left in them, so I'm going to wait to see, you know, if what's the kid down in AAA, Marquez?
Braylon Marquez.
We get Marquez up, then you know what? We'll tap into the road for one last hurrah, because that's also what it's starting to feel like with this roster as a whole. You know, I think there's going to be some changes next year. I really hate that we lost. I know there was no place for him, but I hate that we lost Nicholas last year to Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And see him, you know, doing big things. So.
My takeaway when you talk about that victory robe, is that almost like the Jacksons and the victory tour, that final hurrah, that last farewell before Jermaine Jackson's his haircut started looking a little crispy around the edges?
Yeah, man. It's that last one. It ain't quite completely raggedy. It's not Michael Jackson, this is it level. Like, this is... The victory robe, for the people who don't know, it was the robe that I was gifted, and I started wearing it as a goof, and the Cubs started winning, and then I wore it to Game 7 Cubs-Indians, and the Cubs won in extra innings. And so I think that may have exhausted all of its magic powers, but, you know, we'll see. But for this round of the playoffs, I was just rocking a basic Chris Bryant, nothing too special. I did put my boy in a Javi Baez, though, to see if that would help. Nice. But alas.
How did you sort of imprint as a fan on the Cubs?
Say that one more time.
Your process of becoming a Cubs fan, how did it happen?
That was twofold. So my father, back in the 50s, in the late 50s, early 60s, he worked at WVON in Chicago, and he had a radio show with Ernie Banks. And so Ernie Banks was one of his good friends. So there was a little bit of influence of that. By the time I was born, growing up in Alabama, the Cubs came on the Superstation. And so Cubs games came on during the day. Braves games came on at night. If you wanted to watch baseball, those are the only two teams you're going to see. I could never get the TV remote at night because back in the day, you know, I tried to explain this to kids. Like, there was a time in this world where your mom, like, there was only one TV in the house with cable. You had multiple TVs, but only one TV had all the channels. And so I couldn't watch the Braves at night because my dad hogged the remote. But during the day, I could watch the Cubs. And my dad knew the dude that played with the Cubs. So I may as well just, he got a Jerry Curl. I like Andre the Ice Cube got a Jerry Curl. I like Jerry Curls. All right, I'll be a Cubs fan. And that's what it came down to. My dad's relationship with Ernie Banks, the Cubs coming on during the day, and me thinking the Jerry Curl was cool.
Yeah, you know, because you know the parents back in the day, they're always watching, no matter what it was. Was it Hill Street Blues or something like that? And you never could get exactly what you wanted to watch. And
I liked Hill Street Blues.
Yeah, but I mean, when you're a kid, when you're 8, 9, 10, you're not trying to watch Hill Street Blues or Barney Miller.
Drama at 9. No, the only show I liked that my dad liked was Knight Rider. And now that I'm older, I realize that talking cars ain't all that. And honestly, I wish my car would shut up half the time anyway.
Yeah, when you go back and you look at Knight Rider, you realize that show wasn't great. There were a lot of shows back in the day that you realized that
worked. It was Siri, and the car did 80% of the work. I'm not trying to attack Hasselhoff here and turn this into a Hasselhoff, but Michael Knight as an employee of the Knight Foundation, not impressed. Yeah. Apple Watch, tight jeans. Car did most of the work.
Yeah, but William Daniels was the voice of the car,
Mr. Feeny from Boy Meets World, absolutely. Well, and Dustin Hoffman's the freshman.
Well, and I remember him as Dr. Mark Craig from St. Elsewhere more than anything else. But yeah, he was the dude.
Well, and Roy, you said having a Jerry Curl, Andre Dawson. We were talking about Yvonne Calderon's glistening, carefree curl back in the day. But I mean, that almost sets up a debate. You know, you see all these versus battles on Instagram. If you could set up a debate or a versus between Yvonne Calderon's carefree curl and Andre Dawson's S curl, who would it be? Who would come out on top?
It's got to be the Hawk. Come on, man. That's OG right. Curl.
Hall of Famer.
Check that curl. That thing was dry. It had dandruff or dirt in it. I don't know what it was. Like there would be like stretches of games where Andre Dawson didn't even wash his hair. Like you could see it in his hair. Like he just didn't wash his hair. He just didn't care. But that's back when men were men and didn't use batting gloves.
He's putting up MVP numbers instead of worry about washing his hair.
I also believe that hairstyles will always find their way back. For me, the great era of basketball in the late 80s, early 90s, when the high top fade, it just couldn't, you know, Kenny Skywalker and Kid and Play. And I don't know if that's coming back. Right. But I don't know if we're ever going to see product like that. If we're ever going to see Activator and Jerry Curl, if that is ever going to make its way back.
There's video from last year, not from this season, but from last year. I don't remember the game, but it's online somewhere. Andrew McCutchen in the dugout. I think was he with the Phillies? I think he's with the Phillies.
In the all maroon uniform?
Yeah, he's in the all maroon. He's got his shirt open. He's got chest hair hanging. He's wearing a gold chain. He has on some sort of Jerry Curl wig.
Oh.
And he literally looks like an average second baseman from 1971. And it was glorious.
Yeah, I thought it was Juan Samuel for a second. Yeah, he had a very, very Juan Samuel feel to him.
Oh, but, you went in the vault on that one right there.
Roy, how much would it cost for you to actually wear a Jerry Curl 2020? If someone said, Roy, you have to wear a yellow bottle, red letter, carefree curl for 1 month, what's your asking price? You have to take into consideration. You're going to have to buy new sheets. The collars on your shirts, they're going to be ruined. I mean, they're all out of there. It's all factor.
Oh, I don't know, bro. I'm thinking about for a month, I'd say 50,000.
Well, then.
Wow. Okay, that's about right.
We'll do a GoFundMe. Yeah. We'll get that done. Talking with Roy Wood Jr.
I said, my hair doesn't grow long enough. If I got cast in a movie role tomorrow and they say, you need a Jerry curl, I couldn't do it.
It looked like the Shogun of Harlem wig from The Last Dragon.
Yeah. Yeah, it just, it wouldn't flow. I had to get me one of them Don Cheadle Black Monday wigs. I think he had like a Jerry curl.
Hey, Roy, a question for you about comedy right now, and it's sort of it has to do with Bill Burr's performance on Saturday Night Live when he got beat up for going in a direction where maybe he wasn't quite sure where the line was, and I guess he has been wandering around the streets of New York or Boston trying to find people to workshop stuff, trying out material because the clubs are closed. And I can't imagine how paralyzing it is. It is your job as a comedian to find that line, to make people just enough uncomfortable to laugh or just enough aware of themselves to laugh and to explore things out there. How do you find the line and how do you work at your craft without being able to be in front of a live audience workshopping some material?
Comedy is the only art form that is created in the eyes of the consumer, which makes it, to me, the most challenging. The line is always going to change. I don't think it's a comedian's job to know where the line is. You know, you can know where it is and cross over, but I think a comedian's job is to spit what they think is true, and then let the consumer decide on the back end, you know, whether or not that was too far or too much. The interesting thing about the whole Bill Burr thing is that the only person we haven't heard from is Bill Burr, as it should be, because Bill is going to just stand on his material and go, I said what I said, and that's that. It's very difficult, though, to figure out where the sharp edges are, you know, in your material, because you may want to dull it down a little bit or change some things and tweak some things. And for comedians, it's very difficult. There's some outdoor shows, there's some open mics. There's a few things happening still in New York, but to be able to go out and work a bit properly, we're not there yet. I think that's part of why what Chappelle did this summer, you know, so amazing with 846, because Chappelle essentially went on stage with just raw emotions.
Yep.
I'm not even going to refine it. I'm just going to give you my emotions. And somewhere in there, there's a joke, but that wasn't a traditional, hey, joke, punchline type of comedy set. And I think that's where we're headed stylistically for a while with comedy until the clubs, you know, get back open. I personally think we're going to go back to like a speakeasy type era of stand-up where the venues are going to get smaller and more intimate just because COVID restrictions aren't going to allow the 300, 400 head counts, that you're used to at, say, a Laugh Factory or, you know, like Zany's out in Rosemont or wherever. Like, you're not going to get the same amount of people in the room. So I think comedy is going to become far more intimate. And I think the fan, the real fans of it are going to start showing up again. Because if there's one thing I have seen with comedy clubs since stuff started reopening, it ain't no casual fans showing up no more. It's people who really want to laugh. It's people who are doing their homework on who the comedians are. So it's a much more different environment to create in now for comedians, which I think is a good thing.
The audiences are also more aggressive in how they critique the comic. It's almost, you almost get to like a gotcha kind of moment. And you mentioned that some of the decisions and some of the aesthetic judgments are in the ear of the audience and how they define things and whether they laugh or not. Yet rather than people going out and thinking, I'm just going to have a good time, there are people going out and saying, oh, that material didn't work, or that was mistimed, or
professional haters,
too soon, or that kind of thing. And I'm just wondering what the audience's role is going to be in sort of bringing back live comedy as it comes back.
Your only job as an audience member is to show up. If it's funny, laugh. If it's not, don't. If you want to speak on it, speak on it. But it's not going to change what comedians choose to do. If comedians are going on stage every night worried about where the line is and the line changes every week, then it's going to be something that is going to always be curated for, like, as a comedian, are you on stage to make everybody happy, or are you on stage to spit your truth? That's where it starts and stops. So if you're just trying not to make any waves in the water, and there's comics like that that do it well, no disrespect, but they're going to go on stage with a different set of tenements than someone like myself or someone like a Bill Burr, who's going to go on stage and go, no, I'm coming at your neck. And if you have a problem with it, I'm sorry.
Now, Roy, when you talk about...
I'm not going to apologize. I'm not going to backtrack on it. Matter of fact, I'm not even going to speak on it at all. I'm going to go about my business. Saturday Night Live was last week. Come see me at the Chuckle Hut this week if you like what you saw.
Now, when you talk about Dave Chappelle being able to do what he was able to do this summer, is that almost an unfair comparison to, you know, all the other stand-up comedians in the business? Because like Dan and I were talking about earlier, Dan let me know that Babe Ruth was the innovator of launch angle. But he's Babe Ruth. He's one of one. And Dave Chappelle, that's pretty much what he is, one of one. Other comedians, they don't have the same platform, the same reach, the same gravitas as Dave Chappelle does.
Oh, of course not. Dave Chappelle has a joke jam on a farm on his property.
Yep.
So he literally created a comedy club where he stays. And of course he got in his reps. But I think that every comedian is going to be dealing with the same shorter creative runway, same as Chappelle, where you're not going to have as many times to get out on stage to get this joke refined for television. So when a TV opportunity appears, you're going to have to put out what you got. And if you don't have the joke itself polished, then you have to have at least the intention polished. And I think when I say every comic is that, not every comic is going to be able to get a special where they get one laugh in 10 minutes because the audience isn't going to be with them. They're not going to give the comedian the same attention length as they would a Chappelle. Yep. So if you mean it like that, of course, yeah, I agree. No comic can walk on stage in New York City and for 30 minutes talk about their feelings and how angry they are, and somewhere in there is a Joe Hill. That's not even going to get you rebooked at the comedy club.
Might get the Sandman Sims with the hook on you.
Correct. So you're going to have to be a little more crafty with it, but within that creativity, that's where the mistakes are made. You have to step over the line to find out where the line is. Otherwise, you got a bunch of comics all scared to say what they're really feeling because they're not sure if somebody is going to record it and put it. They might. And there's nothing you can do about that. And you have to be able to stand on that. I just think at the end of the day, the people who like what you do will find you and continue to perform and continue to conduct yourself in an effort to find the people that are like-minded as you. You know, as a comedian, that's all you need. You know, acceptance by the masses is a fallacy. That's not a real, it's unattainable. So spit your truth. The people who like you will come pay money. The people who don't probably won't. And the more extreme your truth is, the less likely you'll be on TV on a regular basis. And you have to be okay with that.
Yep.
You know, but there's always going to be a way for you to make a little bit of money and, you know, do what you love.
It's wonderful stuff from Roy Wood Jr., correspondent on The Daily Show, actor and comedian. Here is to good health to you, and here is to Braylon Marquez being worthy of the Cubs victory robe mm-hmm. in the near future.
If Marquez gets called up, I'll rock the victory robe next season. Mark it down right now.
We got it. Thanks a lot, Roy. Appreciate
Thanks, Roy.
It.
All right, Joe.
Great stuff from
Absolutely.
Roy Wood Jr.
Funny dude, man.
Yeah, no, That's a skilled comedian. I love some of the stuff he said about that, like the self-confidence it takes to know that. And this is critical too, that what he said about truth, that the best comics and ones that I know, the ones that I've talked to, and I can geek out on comedy. Like I can take the fun out of comedy, mm-hmm. like talking about the psychology of it and how it works and why we laugh. And I always wonder like why I laugh at certain things. And
sure.
sometimes it's reasons you don't expect because things a good comedian or filmmaker can touch a certain thing. You're like, wow, that was an odd thing at which I laughed. Why did I laugh at that? But the idea of telling jokes that hit at truth, and when you can tell when someone isn't. You can tell when someone's just a huckster up there and doing it cheaply like that. But that keeps it grounded at a very, very real place. If you are able to be telling that truth, then you're not worried about a perceived line because it's true to you. And you're perfectly confident saying that. And, yeah, that can get you in a lot of trouble. But that's well thought out stuff from him.
Yeah, it's not necessarily you follow a game plan, but you don't necessarily follow a script.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I feel like when guys are out there, especially from a comedic perspective, when they're giving their thoughts and how they feel about certain things, you're never going to go off script and lose your train of thought because you know exactly what you're saying. You know that, okay, I need to get from point A to point B and then make sure I wrap everything up as I hit point C. No, you're just telling, you know, whether it's Dave Chappelle. Like when he started off, I don't know if you've watched any of his recent Netflix specials, but when he starts off talking about Anthony Bourdain, and I was a big Anthony Bourdain fan, and I'm a huge Dave Chappelle fan. And at first it was like, oh my goodness, where's he going with this? But Dave Chappelle, master at his craft, way he reels everything in and ties everything together. I mean, it's seamless and it's flawless.
Billy Connolly is like that as a storyteller also. But some of that is like some of those guys do script every word and have it down perfectly, and others are gifted in a way that they don't have to. Yeah, Chappelle's got it all. He can do it any way he wants. But
it's almost like Richard Pryor. Like, I mean, I feel like Richard Pryor's funniest stuff was not scripted. I know that he and Paul Mooney, they were a big comedic team back in the day, but I feel like a lot of things that were Richard Pryor's, you know, bread and butter.
But it was true.
That's true. Talking about shooting a car and setting himself on fire. Absolutely. A lot of it is true.
When you're running down the street and your hair is on fire, people will get out of your way.
Absolutely. Rooted in reality.
It comes down to what George Bernard Shaw said. And I wrote that anybody in who does this for a living, too, we're half comic in this business, sometimes more than half. And the timing principles are the same and the truth telling remains the same. The George Bernard Shaw, if you want to tell people the truth, you better make them laugh or they will kill you.
It's true.
And that's what a lot of these comedians are dealing with right now in very, very fraught times. That is Cole Wright of Marquee Network. I'm Dan Bernstein. We are the Lawrence Holmes Show. And I want to get your specific thoughts on what's going to happen with the Bears on Sunday.
Okay.
We've talked around it. We've talked about it. I want to find out what you think is going to happen, because I have not sort of congealed into a Bears feeling on this game yet. Maybe you have. We'll get to that briefly next on The Score. Been fun times on these airwaves today. A cool but sunny Friday in Chicago, and I don't mind this little bit of chill. I don't mind it's like shorts and a hoodie weather kind of.
Not shorts anymore. It's hoodie weather. I was shorts and a hoodie guy. I mean, I lived in California for the last 6 years, and that was pretty much my uniform.
Okay,
shorts and a hoodie. Sometimes sweatpants, shorts. My wife says I look like I'm wearing pajamas everywhere I go. But you know, you got to be comfortable.
That's what radio is all about.
You
got to
be comfortable. Absolutely.
That's why radio can be better than TV. Because TV, all you beautiful people and your fancy clothes and all that, and your
they're props,
your makeup,
makeup on the buttons, right where you always pull your button closed. There's makeup right there. So why spend a bunch of money on something as long as it looks good? Doesn't need to cost a whole bunch.
Yeah, there was a whole lot of backlash to having Len and JD and everybody in their suits, but that's what they want. I was reading a survey that John Greenberg did in The Athletic about Marquee Network and what people think and what people liked, and after 1 year and how it all went. It was amazing how strongly people felt about seeing the broadcasters semi-formal instead of casual in polos.
Well, they loosen it up as the show goes on. And I feel like, you know, one thing, if you look, I mean, Chicago is a major market, number three media market in the United States. And if you look at all the major markets, all their broadcasters, what do? They wear shirts and ties. And I don't think Len and JD were opposed to it. I think Len might have liked it a little more than JD. But, I mean, as sharp as those guys looked, I mean, once the broadcast went on, they took the jackets off, they loosened the ties up a little bit. I mean, like I said, that's what we see in all of the major markets. It's not Kansas City. You know, it's not some of the smaller markets that we see. It's not Oakland. And there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, you want to give off that air of professionalism. And I think that's what Len and JD, I thought they looked great.
Oh, I mean, too.
I thought they looked fantastic.
Len's a dapper dude.
He is. He's all about the European cuts.
Yeah, European kind of hipster Euro stuff.
He's got that frame, though. I mean, he can wear those things. I mean, and not all of us are lucky enough to wear. We can wear the one button and the extra skinny ties. But Len, I mean, Len's a runner. He's a creature of habit. I mean, what does he run, 7 miles a day?
Yeah, tennis player,
runner.
He
gets after it, man. Yeah, he's a beast.
And bassist. I think he can play the bass aerobically.
Him and Speaks. They're in the band together. They didn't ask me. I can play the drums poorly. They didn't ask me to be in the band, though.
Oh, you could probably.
It's all right.
You could do a song, maybe.
I can play cowbell, like Will Ferrell when cowbell. Bruce Dickinson was in town.
Okay, we have the big game of the weekend being the Bears at the Carolina Panthers. And generally, I don't pick games because I'm bad at
Lucky
it.
Lucky for you,
and
I do.
Because I don't gamble, and I don't know. I can't tell you who's going to win a game. What I always say is if I have a strong feeling, I'll be honest with you, and I'll give you my strong feeling. I have the opposite of a strong feeling about this game. I've got no idea. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I do pick games. Funny you should mention that. And, you know, I work for FanDuel as well, and I was able to pick some. I pick two upsets every single week, and I've never lost both upsets. I'm usually always 50-50. Mm-hmm. Last week, I picked Carolina to beat the Atlanta Falcons, and I picked the Miami Dolphins to beat the San Francisco 49ers. So I'm feeling good about those picks. But when it comes to my feeling this week, I picked this week on FanDuel. I think it comes on CBS at 10 o'clock or 10:30 this on Sunday morning. I picked the Bears to win 17-14. I feel like what we've seen from the Carolina Panthers, that they beat the Atlanta Falcons, but from what we know of the Atlanta Falcons, are they a good football team? Absolutely not. I mean, if they were, Dan Quinn would still have his checks every other Thursday that were embossed with the Falcons logos on them, but that's not what's going on right now. Raheem Mostert. Who's
Raheem Morris?
That's what it is, Raheem Morris. We were sitting there talking about, you know, guys that are problems after they were not good in years before, like Mike Davis. But I just think that the Bears, this is the week that I think they go from lucky to good. I think that when you talked about that not quitting, that tenacity that we see out of this ball club, I think that we continue to see that, and I think this is the week where everything starts to fall into place.
And maybe I'm
wrong.
Right.
Maybe I'm wrong.
From
I
your
know,
mouth
though.
To the ears of the football gods, because that's all I've been asking for is when you have the opportunity against a defense that is ripe for it.
Yep.
The only issue for me is I need 30.
I don't think that's.
I can't handle 17.
I don't think that if at last look, the Carolina Panthers, they haven't given up more than 22 or 23 points in the last three games. And like I said, 17-14 is where I see this one going. And you're going to have to keep them down. If you can limit Mike Davis, I mean, you know what his strengths, you know what his weaknesses are because he was on your team last year. So if you can handcuff him and then make Teddy Bridgewater beat you.
It's better than an alternative, but I want 30. I'm getting greedy. The 14 sounds
rich.
Good.
It's a little rich.
It can't be. Not for Matt Nagy's offense. Not if this guy really knows what he's doing. And his quarterback and the new offensive coordinator and the running game coordinator, their passing game coordinator, and they've got all their weapons and all their tight ends. Other teams score 30.
It's almost like, yeah, other teams score 30, but other teams have, and once again, I'm going back to
the quarterback's
no disrespect. That's what I'm going back to. Other teams have more personnel to put up those 30-point games. That you know, you look even at the Cleveland Browns, you look at all the weapons they have
loaded.
On offense, and what do they need Baker Mayfield to do right now? Well, we know you're the quarterback, but we need you to be the point guard. We need you to distribute. We need you to facilitate. You're not the star on this team, even though you're being compensated like the star. Because if you look at the teams in the NBA, is the point guard the highest paid player? Probably not, unless you're Chris Paul, unless you're one of those guys that's a dynamic player. But you're just asked to distribute. If you're Rajon Rondo, get it to AD. Get it to LeBron. And that's what Baker Mayfield's doing right now, and that's why you see those guys putting up those 30, those 40-point games, 49 points versus the Cowboys. You're not going to see that from this Bears team. So what do they need to do? They need to grind you defensively. They need to keep you from putting points on the board while they just put just a few more than you. It doesn't matter how many points you win by. I mean, you can win by 3 points every single game. All wins look the same in the books. They're all a W.
Let the record show LeBron led the NBA in assists per game.
All right. Is he better than Michael Jordan?
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
By leaps and bounds.
What, is the show done yet with you? I'm about to walk out of here right
by
now.
By leaps and bounds, and it's not even
wow.
And it's not even close. When we come back, we are going to transition with Rami McLouf and Danny Parkins on the Danny Parkins show. What? What are you looking at me for?
Wow.
Shane? I can't hear you. Your mic is off and it's good. And that
is Rami McLouf, the new Irishman we have filling in with Parkins. It's been McLouf all week.
McLouf.
Yes.
Sorry, he'll come in and kick me in the nuts. That's fine. They're next on the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us, and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.